Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
This player to center for Taves. He's got a breakaway. Taves to win the game. Marion Hossa. A singular effort. Here's that Smith. 22-year-old.
Did it again.
Crawford. Call the cops.
Welcome in to a nice new episode of Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dave Melton, the site manager for Second City Hockey. You can find me on Twitter at @SCH_DaveM. And it's a lot has happened in the last week since we have spoken to you. And I've got all my usual line mates with me this evening to discuss all of those things that have happened. Up first, the analytics darling of Second City Hockey. You can find on Twitter at Shepherd Price. It is Shepherd Price.
Hi. I'm trying now to remember the last week, like, because there is a lot to talk about, but is there all of the things to talk about?
Maybe not all of them. Stay tuned
to this episode of Musings on Madison.
That is a professional tease. That is some excellent work. So I had to pay you the big bucks around these parts.
You're right.
Yeah. Also with us this evening, he is the Second City Hockey, what Greg Graffin is to Bad Religion. You can find him on Twitter at Mil182. It is Mil Savage.
I am just a punk rock song, and I really should have got more of an Etta James reference because at last they fired the coach.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess maybe we'll run it back next week, or if they fire the interim coach, we could.
I'm also super pissed because when I was in Florida, I lost my Bad Religion No Control t-shirt. So, Sky Point, my favorite shirt.
Do they have more? I feel like you might be able to track it.
They sell the old album shirts from time to time, but they like shuffle them around, you know? Cause like with old bands, there's an anniversary every freaking year of an album. And I just got to get lucky and make sure they have one that fits me.
Yeah. Well, maybe you get your chance on Saturday.
We'll see.
I heard they're coming around these parts.
Well, here's to that. I'm cracking a beer.
Yeah, I heard that in the background. Nicely done. And also with us this evening, she's not on Twitter, but you can find her at secondcityhockey.com under the name LBR. It is the Second City Hockey Bull and Wall of Text, Betsy.
I don't have anything amusing to say tonight. You guys interrupted my viewing of The Masked Singer. We already talked about that for too long before we started recording.
Yeah, I mean, apologies in advance. Like, you could have just said we're going to come back in an hour after The Masked Singer is over. I mean,
no, it's okay. I'll watch it on Hulu tomorrow.
Is it Slipknot, the original Masked Singers?
I mean, isn't Kiss?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Technically, well, that's
not a mask. That's face paint.
That can be mask-y.
Yeah,
people,
but it's
don't
totally
recognize
different
them outside the paint.
It's totally different when you have to play, though, in it. Like, a mask is tough. Like, I'm sure those people on that show are probably, like, sweating like crazy.
Oh, you can't. So they did, like, cameras inside some of them, and some of them can't see. Like, Gladys Knight was in this bee costume, and she was like, I couldn't see. She's like, I don't know how Donny Osmond was running around in his costume. She's like, I didn't want to go down any steps. I didn't want to get too close to the edge of the stage. She was like, I thought I was going to fall. So... sweaty, can't see, kind of immobile in some of them. I don't know how some of them do it.
And Mil, I did a quick Google search for first band to wear masks, and the answer that's come up so far is one that I'm sure you're familiar with. It is Gwar, because they're formed.
Yeah, they're older than Slipknot. So. Gwar live is a sight to see.
It is. Every year at Riot Fest, halfway through the weekend, you start seeing people walking around with weird food coloring all over their face. And you're like, oh, Gwar must have played. Okay.
I get mad when I have to wear a nice shirt to play, let alone that shit. Well, that's like uncomfortable as hell, I'm sure.
But we're not wearing any masks this evening, are we, folks?
No.
I don't.
We are exposed without a coach.
I guess. I was trying to figure out how to make that a good segue into what we're going to talk about, and I don't know if I stuck the landing at all, but let's just roll with it and pretend we did anyway.
King shit.
So
there's your segue.
I don't have to tell anybody that anybody listening to this podcast that the Blackhawks fired their coach on Saturday. I've quick poll of the group. I was very surprised that it happened that quickly. Were you three surprised?
They have to go on a 104.4 point pace the rest of the season to make the playoffs.
That's it?
Yeah. No, I'm not surprised.
No, but okay. Betsy, what about you?
I think we were all trying to guesstimate that it would happen after Arizona because of the 4-day break. But after how horrible they played against Winnipeg, I was like, no, it's got to. That was like the worst ever. They had they had an under 10% expected goal percentage. They had only done that one other time since they started recording those types of stats on Natural Stat Trick. So that's ridiculous. So I was kind of like, it could happen, but it was a little bit surprising. I was more excited than surprised.
Yeah, Mill, what about you? What was your? Were you surprised?
I got to be honest with you guys. I thought if they fired Mr. Colleton before the 12th, I would be surprised. But I definitely wanted him to have separation from the 2010 front office because we don't want to kill him as a human. He seems like an okay guy. But I was thinking I'd be surprised if they fired him earlier. And then I got the notification and we all talked and I was kind of like, oh, like this is logical. Like I wasn't really shocked. Like when you think of on ice situations and kind of separate that from everything else that's going on, it's like, yeah, this makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think to Betsy's point, like that Friday game against the Jets was just a
rough,
like just completely rough. Just so they were so lifeless, just no, like Winnipeg got that first and second goal and it was just like, you knew it was over. Like in the first period, you knew that game was over. That team was not coming back. And my favorite part of the press conference on Sunday when Kyle Davidson and Derek King spoke for the first time was Kyle Davidson's quote was something along the lines of, I noticed that there was a problem and we needed to make a coaching change. I quickly identified that there was a problem. The emphasis on how quickly he identified the problem, I feel like that kind of throws Stan Bowman under the bus a little bit for not noticing the problem, which anything that throws him under the bus, we're pretty happy with around these parts. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm still surprised at how quickly it happened given the massive regime change that had happened like 2 weeks prior, but it certainly didn't come a day late.
No,
for sure.
I think 31 thoughts on 31 or 32 thoughts now. Sorry, Seattle. Elliot mentioned, Friedman mentioned that game was a lot worse than 5-1 and should have been a lot worse. And like the Jets just like stepped off the throat massively and was like, okay, we're done here. Yeah. And B, like Stan Bowman was like the biggest supporter of Jeremy Colleton. And so once the bigger supporter was gone, it was kind of a limited time.
Yeah, I guess I didn't have optimism that was going to happen that quickly. But I'm glad it did because I think we talked about this 2 or 3 weeks ago after like it might've been the first home game or maybe it was number two or three. But I remember there were fire Colleton chants in the crowd at the United Center.
That was the first one.
Yeah. I can't think of a head coach that has ever survived that. Like once the crowd is chanting fire, is chanting to fire you, it is inevitable. It is only a matter of time before you lose your job. So this is kind of what I want to ask you guys about because my number one reaction when I saw the news was just relief. I was so relieved that it's done and we finally don't have to deal with the shit anymore. And maybe we can actually start like looking at this team and maybe actually getting something to analyze, I guess, because anything that happened under the Colleton era felt like it was going to be pointless because you knew the coach was going to change. So I guess that's my question now, swinging around, starting with you, Shay. What was your reaction to the news on Saturday when you found out that Colleton was fired?
Yeah, I think you're right with that relief that, like, just, oh, Jesus, thank God that, like, we've talked a lot about the things we saw under Colleton, that, like, the system was one of the worst systems, that, like, he was not getting the best out of players, that, like, he didn't understand matchups. He didn't, his lines were weird. Like, there was all these problems with the team under him. And I think it was just thank God and, like, a little bit of stability. But it's also, one of my other first reactions was they let an interim GM fire the head coach this early on in his tenure.
It was surprising that they gave him that much authority, but I mean, maybe that tells you just how bad the thing was that the owner and CEO, when the interim GM went to him with his case and laid it out for him, and they go, yeah, we probably need to do this. Like, I think that's indicative of just how sour things had gotten with the on ice product.
Might also show how much they trust Davidson to do this job, but like, he might get the interim tag removed.
I immediately, when we first were talking about this and we were like, oh, well, they're going to go get a GM and it might be a while. And I was like, well, they might end up just making Davidson the GM eventually, because supposedly under all the reports, he was kind of being groomed for that anyway. That he'd kind of risen up the ranks. And he was kind of Bowman's little like pet project to becoming the next one. So that's the only like taint on him was, would they want somebody still that close to Bowman?
That's my problem.
Yeah. But
yeah,
I mean, he said all the right things. At least he was like, I'm not Bowman. And I'm like, good. Try your best. Not that Bowman was like a horrible GM. He just hadn't been a good one for a while.
Yes. And that's the problem, I think too, with it is like him grooming somebody to take over. I don't want him to be the one grooming somebody.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, it depends on what you can learn. Like, you can learn, maybe he learned what not to do from Stan Bowman. Like, there's, just because your boss is bad doesn't immediately mean the employee is bad. Like, again, you can learn from your boss's mistakes and do things differently. And he's significantly younger than Bowman. So he's only, what, like 30? He's in his like mid-30s, I thought.
Like 31, I'm pretty sure.
He's like 32. I think he might be 32 now.
He was, again, we've talked about this before, I think. He was an intern in 2010.
Let's try to look up and find his...
I'm pretty sure he's 32 or 33.
Yeah, but he's very young, so he probably has a significantly different perspective just by age alone. And I don't know, the nice thing, and this is, Mill, what I want to use, I just like the idea of a clean slate. Again, we're, the off-ice stuff is a whole other book that we're not even going to approach here, but that is why I felt so much relief, because it feels like there's finally like, we can start watching games again and like understand, like make conclusions that might be long-term, I guess. So has in the last two, or well, going back to the original question, Mill, just your original reaction to the news and then how that's kind of affected the way you've watched the last two games.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of in strictly focusing on ice. It's kind of long overdue. And again, I know that I've kind of led the parade of like, let's get a new coach. And I don't want to come off like I'm attacking Colleton as a man. I'll buy him a shot and a beer and apologize if I ever did. I actually would really love to do that. But
I'd love to hear some of those conversations.
Right. But like, we've all seen the team struggle for a long time now. It's way overdue. So I'm just kind of like, well, I don't know if they can salvage anything from the season, but this roster is a lot better than those first 12 or 13 games showed. So I've just kind of felt like, well, let's start over, to quote Boxcar Racer, and let's just kind of go from there. You know, let's see, because I think a couple of the guys on the team are already looking like, not like, oh, they look so much better, but looks like refreshed almost, like new perspective, you know?
So Dylan Strome.
I mean, hey, Seth Jones had a pretty good game last night.
He had a great game last night.
And you know, that's what you have to have from your guys getting paid a bajillion dollars. But all of them, Taves played really good.
Mm-hmm. So before we go too far, like, we're going to turn to the future in a second here, but I wanted to wrap up kind of the Jeremy Colleton discussion with this thought. Like, I think from some of the things that you've been, that they've been little stories that have leaked out and observations that people have made since Derek King has taken over, I think I have a working theory about the overall thing that went wrong with Colleton. And I think it's that he had a hockey philosophy for how you were supposed to win games, and he refused to adapt that philosophy to his roster. Like, what he wants to do to win games there, you can win doing that, but you probably need a very specific set of players to do that. And it just seemed like he also had this element of, I don't know if micromanaging is the right word, but he tried to control too many things, and you're dealing with professional athletes who, like, if you try to control them too much, eventually, like, you're making them all think. Like, there, it seemed like there were so many guys that the Hawks never played fast. Like, regardless of whatever team speed they have, it seemed like they were always trying to be, like, there was that second of thought before they made the play. Like, they weren't playing, they weren't flowing within the system that was trying to be installed. And it was like Colleton wanted them to be at this spot every single time, or they're, you know, or you're going to get benched. So I think it was just an overarching theme of he was trying to do too much as a young coach, and he, instead of letting the players use the abilities that they had.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of, like, I think there was a lot of moments of, like, especially defensively, clear overthinking of things.
Yeah. Overthinking is the word. Yeah. Like, it just, I think he, and maybe that's something that, you know, if he gets another crack at it in the AHL or maybe in the NHL, maybe he'll loosen those reins a little bit and understand that there is room for interpretation within a system of how you want to play hockey. It doesn't have to be, you know, black and white. There's plenty of gray in the middle that will work just as well. Mill, Betsy, anything else to add to that before we never talk about Jeremy Colleton ever again?
I'm just glad that we'll have new topics.
Right?
We've beat,
like, Colleton how
death.
Like how Derek King's nickname apparently as a player was Yoda, and now that he's a new first-time NHL head coach, he's technically a baby, which makes him technically Baby Yoda.
Okay.
I think I have one thing to throw out before we're done with Colleton. You know, I had a lot of people, like, you know, people start mocking it, and we got sick of it too, the system, all this stuff. But, like, in the NHL, it's not basketball, it's not football. Like, you don't need to sit there and overthink your defense. You just have to kind of, like, be in position. And the Hawks are trying to play a minor league style that took them out of position. And I'm just like, I don't understand why they allowed that to happen so long. But I will say, I don't think it's Jeremy Colleton's fault that he drowned for 3 years. The team let him, the upper front management, you know, upper management. So I want people to understand, like, yes, there's a problem with the system. Yes, it was Jeremy Collins' system, but hopefully this new regime, if there are problems, they will address them.
Yeah, and I think the point you made, like, I wanted to write an article several times throughout Colleton's era that I didn't really feel like it was Colleton's fault. He was just given, you know, the opportunity of a lifetime to be an NHL head coach. There's only 32 of these jobs right now, and they're difficult to get. So even if you're having to take over for a guy that had won 3 Stanley Cups, the Hall of Fame thing might be different now given the circumstances, but a guy who had so much standing within the organization, had accomplished so much, it certainly was not an ideal place. And I like, ultimately Colleton was not really proved to not be ready for that role, but it wasn't his fault. It was the fault of the guy that hired him, that he couldn't evaluate the coaching talent enough to make that position work. So another thing we can blame Stan Bowman for, because we're going to, like, even though he's not around, his fingerprints are going to be on this team for the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The common saying there is that, like, you never want to be the person who replaces the legend. You want to be the person who replaces the legend.
Yeah. That's,
you want to be the next, you want to be the Blackhawks next guy.
Yeah. So, I guess Derek King's only interim at the moment.
Currently, yeah.
So, and I think, I don't know if you said it, Shay or Betsy, but one of you two said, like, the press conference on Sunday, it was kind of refreshing for the Hawks to have a press conference and everybody just said the right things and it sounded like positive and good. And like, you didn't walk away from it, like rolling your eyes or just feeling awful about something. So that was a much pleasant change. I feel so much, everything around the Blackhawks feels so much lighter at this moment, just because the weight of the off ice stuff and the on ice failures. It was anything to just lighten the burden a little bit. And I feel like we've gotten it a little bit. So, I'll be totally honest with, for those listening, I'm sure everyone on staff is aware, I didn't see the game last night against Pittsburgh, the 3-2 overtime win. So I don't have much to offer in terms of analysis from that one. And I was able to watch the one before that on Sunday. But I guess we'll swing this around. Will, we'll let you start off first. Is there anything you've noticed about the Hawks in the Derek King era, which is all of two games now? Anything major or different or noticeable that has stood out to you since the coaching change?
Well, they came out of two games in a row, 2 points. So I think that
winning's a change. Winning is definitely a change.
And I know it sounds like a joke, but in all seriousness, I mean, like, that's pretty, like, that's the most wins they've had under a coach this year. So
that's, when you put it in that context, it sounds so ridiculous, but it's honestly the truth.
It is. And I think it's kind of, it's a little loose right now. You know, they need to play a little better, tighten up. The third period, like, they played a good first two, and then it seems like they got a little bit relaxed. But they're more positionally sound. They look a little bit more confident, like they're making the first move, so to speak. There's definitely things we'll talk about as the season goes on that I want to see them adjust. But just as an umbrella thing, I mean, they look like they're at least a 500 team playing the way they should, if not like a more talented team than that. So. Early in the season, at least. So hopefully they can get to that level.
I want to tee this one up for Betsy because I know she talked about it in our Slack chat, and I think you mentioned it also in the game recap. Seth Jones Tuesday night apparently was awesome. So I would like to hear more about that. Please, Betsy, go ahead.
Yeah, so you know how one of the things coming into the season was Seth Jones had two fairly bad, one, at least one extremely bad season in Columbus. And there was all this talk about, hey, was it because of torts or was it just that Seth Jones is falling off a cliff? Which is it? Well, last night, Seth Jones put on a performance that made pretty much everybody just go, wow. He was everywhere on the ice. And I'm not saying he was perfect because he made mistakes. There was one goal against with Carter, the rushing one, the game tying one, where I think he let, was it him?
Yeah. Well, he let Carter get inside position, which he shouldn't have done, but also the pass, I don't know how that even got through.
Exactly. I was like, it was a crazy good luck. He was in a decent position, not the best position. But either way, he was everywhere defensively and offensively. And it kind of felt like the leash had been taken off of him. The sequence leading up to his goal, I posted it in the recap, but they like did the whole follow. When you talk about a cycle, that's what that entire sequence was. They actually cycled the puck and Jones was the spoon for that cycle. He stirred it. Everybody moved around him.
That's a great.
My brother said that last night. Actually, my brother goes, well, he's the straw that stirs the drink on that one.
It was one of those, and he did that multiple times throughout the game. And on the defensive side of things, at least in the first two periods, like Mill said, the third period kind of fell away. And some of that was score effects, but not all of it. He was really good. He's got some positional issues still that I think somebody just needs to like break down with him. But he's so athletic that he is good about being able to cover those mistakes, like being able to make up for maybe some technical things that are wrong with his positioning. But one of the things that I noticed in the game was, and I want other people to pay attention to this, are they defending the blue line more? Because that was a big pet peeve of mine under Colleton, mm-hmm. was the, you know, just letting people walk in. Seth Jones, one of the few good things that didn't drop while he was in Columbus was he was pretty good at defending the blue line. And I saw him do that a lot more. And same thing with McCabe, both of them were standing up at the blue line a lot more. And that helped a lot, I think, against the Predators. And especially in the first two periods, the first period they had low quantity. They had still decently high quality. So once the Penguins did get in, their shots were good, but they kept them from setting up as much. And before that third period, Jones was, I want to say he was at like 56 or 57 expected goal shares. And he didn't spend all of his time with Kane, Doc, and DeBrincat, who was the line that was just killing it before that too. He was splitting his time. So when you put up those types of numbers and you look good doing it, I think, you know, if he could do that more regularly, I don't know if he'll necessarily still be worth his contract. That's like a completely separation, but he could be a number one D. But he'd have to put that type of game up consistently, not necessarily all the time, but enough, because nobody's perfect all the time, but just enough. And I will, you know, I'll be like, I'm sorry for being a hater ahead of this guy.
Yeah, like I think the most encouraging thing is like you got a glimpse of why Seth Jones had the, you know, why the Hawks traded for him, essentially. Like, I know he, as you mentioned, like he had his struggles for sure, but earlier in his career, this was like a legitimate, everyone thought he was going to be a future Norris Trophy winner. He had some down years and hasn't really gotten back to that yet. But I don't think we ever saw those glimpses in the first 12 games of this season. So the fact that you got him now, if they become a more consistent thing, that will be good, is my expert analysis there. That will be a good thing if Seth Jones plays good hockey. Where else can you find this type of content, folks? I don't know where else. the other thing is, as I'm looking at the schedule, like with the coaching change, like I think if there was ever going to be a time for the Hawks to get right, like I think, what was it, Shay, you mentioned like 104.4 point pace?
104.4 pace, rest of the season.
Yeah, that's it. Well, I mean, if you look at the next four games, like they play Arizona on Friday. Arizona has one win. For a while, it seemed like that was going to be the battle of winless teams, but each team has gotten off the schneid. Then they play Seattle and the Kraken are expansion team, so they're not all that great. They do have to go to Edmonton next Saturday, the 20th, which, you know, won't be easy, but
goal of the year, Connor McDavid already.
Yeah, I guess if the Hawks can defend Connor McDavid with six guys, the
Rangers, Connor McDavid is not point per game, like statistically, like he literally has had a point in every game.
He might be isn't he like 2 points per game right now?
He might be mathematically 2 points per game, but he has not had a game yet where he hasn't scored. And somehow Draisaitl still has more points than him.
They're both tied. They both have 23 points in 11 games.
Okay, that might have been after the last game.
That's a 2 point pace if math checks out. That's silly. I didn't know that about McDavid. Yeah, he's really good at the hockey thing. But so if you
some would
you know,
say
after Edmonton, then they play Vancouver and Calgary, and I know Calgary and Calgary's off to a better start than expected. Eventually, a little bit too, but like those are some winnable games. And like they obviously the road back to a potential playoff spot is a long one, and I'm not even going to entertain a discussion about it until at least Christmas. But at least there is a reason to like look at the schedule, not just feel dread. Now, you know, like there's actually games to pick out. Like, all right, well maybe. You know, they've won two. Maybe you put a few more together. Maybe you still won against Edmonton. Maybe you steal St. Louis. At least we don't have to watch another game like the one against Winnipeg. I guess that's the overall theme there. At least they're not going to completely lay an egg like they did against the Jets on Friday night.
Did you guys happen to see what Zadorov did yesterday?
No, I don't. Unfortunately, this year have time to pay any attention to teams that are not Chicago or Vegas.
He went out of his way to make a hit and like crushed some dude, and in the backswing of his check, his backhand of his stick hit the puck into his own net. It was absolutely incredible. I shared the video.
Wait to watch the Hawks play against Zadorov. Now that we had to live through the Zadorov experience, I can't wait to experience it from the other side again now, because I didn't really notice him when he was in Colorado because they didn't think about him much. Now it's going to be much more noticeable.
But it was not like a thing where it was like, oh, it's Zadorov, he sucks. It was legitimately impressive how insane this play was.
Yeah. Like, it was maybe not a great hit either.
Right. Like, it was an own goal. It was an own goal on like a red-ass hit.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait.
And the hit was like almost mid ice, wasn't it? Like almost center ice.
It was like, well, it was like up by the blue line, I think. It was like above the dots.
I thought it was out of the zone, but
it might have been the video I shared. It was like a replay angle, but I was like, I laughed because I was just like, I don't understand how that happens. Like mathematically, what you'd have to like hit the puck the right way on the hit.
I can tell you how that happens, Bill. It's Nikita Zadorov. That's how that happens.
It's Samore.
So to bring this back to the current members of the Chicago Blackhawks, again, like we mentioned the game. They
play. Sorry.
You would. So they got the Coyotes on Friday, Kraken next week, I think on Wednesday night. So I guess the main thing I'm asking is, you know, with these games coming up, you have two teams that you probably should be able to beat. Shay, is there anything in particular you're going to be watching or anything you're going to keep an eye on that maybe is further signs of improvement out of this group under the new coach?
Don't give up 70 shot attempts.
Well, okay. That's a good start.
which the Blackhawks did to the Penguins. Again, Penguins team without, I think they're without Sidney Crosby and without, definitely without Evgeny Malkin.
Crosby played one game and then went right back into the protocol.
Yeah.
Nathan
MacKinnon did the opposite.
Those 70, that was just at 5-on-5, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. That was just 5-on-5. Like, don't do that again.
6 in the third. 32-6 in shot attempts.
Yeah, 32-6. And even looking at like adjusted, 30-6. Not great. Not great.
Yeah.
So maybe don't do that anymore.
Hey, we didn't say the coaching change was gonna fix everything.
No. No, clearly not. Marc-Andre Fleury had like his best game of the season because he had to get that win. Like maybe try and fix that. And maybe the weird usage too of players continues. Like Erik Gustafsson played 8 minutes.
Well, I think that's
because he sucks.
Yes. And Reese Johnson played 6 minutes, which everybody's proud of. But Adam Gaudette only played 5:18. Like, Mike Hardman played 7:46.
Yeah.
Then Seth Jones played a more than half an hour.
Yeah, like, that was awful.
Yeah, well, on the defense front, Jay, the good news is that Wyatt Kalinuk was sent to Rockford to play in a game this evening. We're recording this Wednesday night. He's playing, and I think with the expectation is that he's going to be in the Blackhawks lineup on Friday, probably for Erik Gustafsson, and then barring injury, we probably won't see Erik Gustafsson again. At least that's the hope. And then also in the vein of guys that are getting better, like Brandon Hagel is going to be out for 2 weeks, which that kind of sucks. But if it was going to happen anywhere, it happens in a place where the games are kind of spaced out, so it might minimize the number of games he'll miss. But you also got Tyler Johnson back, and you also got Isaac Phillips off of COVID protocol. I think Henrik Borgstrom's probably going to be back. He missed Tuesday's game with a non-COVID-related illness. So
Phillips went back to Rockford, though.
And Phillips was probably going back to Rockford. Kalinuk went to Rockford for conditioning, it seems like, and he'll be back Friday. But all that is a roundabout way of saying, Jay, I think the weird player usages, I think some of that is attributed to injuries and COVID protocol and what have you. So I think maybe going forward, it'll be better.
Yeah. And for Gaudette, I noticed that King stuck to lines a little bit better than, you know, JC would mix them up a little bit too much occasionally. He tried to stick to lines so they could roll together, and Gaudette just happened to be on the line with Reese Johnson and stuff. So bad luck of the draw that he was that low. But I think that had to do more to do with his ice time than necessarily like him playing. They didn't want to rotate him away. So like I said, Reese Johnson is the anchor to just not be there. Poor guy. I feel so bad now a little bit. I'm like, what if he reads our articles? He's going to be like that mean lady from Second City Hockey.
Nothing personal, Reese.
I'm sure you're a nice kid. Please don't play on my hockey team, nice though. Kid.
Yeah, that zero shot share 0.00 shot share on Tuesday, not great.
Yeah,
he has some of the worst shot stats in the NHL. I think he was like last in expected goal shares, and obviously the Blackhawks are bad, but when you're that bad on a bad team, like,
it's not good for your agent when salary negotiations come back up in the offseason.
Well, also, I was trying to explain to somebody that, because they were like, I thought he was a defensive player when he was in the OHL.
I think he was in WHL.
He was fine, but as an overager. And then when he got to the AHL, you could tell that what worked in juniors did not work anymore. It wasn't up to speed. His positioning wasn't sound enough and that kind of stuff. Like, he was making up for it with like good skating in juniors, and they are rushing him. He could be a good player, but they're doing him a disservice by rushing him to the NHL, in my opinion. So for his own good, but also the good of the Hawks, which I care about more, please send him back down. Thank you.
I feel like when guys suck, they're either really nice guys, like they become pastors or whatever, or they're like really douchey. Like they have Twitter opinions. Yeah, he might be really nice. I don't know. I feel like this whole thing with the coaching change and like the 2010 stuff or whatever, it's just so perfect to reference when Mighty Ducks, when they have the cardboard cut out, and they're like, this is a distraction. This is a fire in a barrel. This is a distraction in a fire in a barrel. Any questions? And it's like, no, burn that shit to the ground and let's move forward.
Oh, that is
fucking Kyle Davidson or Kyle Bond or whatever the fuck your name is. Let's go.
Kyle Bond. I don't know any other better way to summarize it than that, than just, you know, throw it all in the barrel, light it on fire, and let's move forward.
With Coach McKay.
Coach McKaying.
DK, baby. Let's go.
I will say really briefly, like, again, very small sample, and none of us know him personally, I don't think, and I've never talked to him personally, but Derek King seems like a very pleasant person to be around. All his press conferences have been very entertaining. I don't know. It's nice to have something pleasant around the team again after the Jeremy Colleton death march of the last month. So there's that too. But yeah. I think that's going to, I don't think we have much more Blackhawks things to talk about. That was kind of the obviously the big news of the last week was the Colleton firing. Yeah, again, they play Friday against the Coyotes at home. Next Wednesday, they're against the Kraken. And we'll probably have a pod recording some point early next week. But right now, we're going to take a quick little break, and we're going to come back. We might talk about hockey. We might talk about food stuff. We might do both. I don't know. But that's for you to find out on the other side of this break.
This is advertiser content brought to you by Frito-Lay.
Hello, I'm Chip Murphy, here to get you ready for the big tournament. Tonight we break down who will be cutting. Cut! What are you two doing?
Sorry, Chip. Prez here got his feathers ruffled when I told him Ruffles has zero chance of winning the title.
And I was letting Dip know that she is not taking into account Ruffles' iconic ridges.
Guys, it's March. We have to start talking about the tournament.
We are. It is the 2023 Frito-Lay Snack-It.
We're talking about big-time matchups between Cheetos, Smartfood, Lay's, Sun Chips, and more.
Just head to the Frito-Lay Snack Bracket and vote for your favorite chip, pretzel, or dip for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks.
This sounds great. Keep up the good work.
Just go to Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends 4/3/2023. Void where prohibited. Here's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome back to Musings on Madison. And as promised before the break, we're going to talk about something. And it seems like we've kind of exhausted all the Blackhawks discussion. So I think we're going to put a pin in all of that and transition to our potentially award-considered food take segments, because you guys all know what time it is. And if the first thought in your head was Christmas, know that I hate you, because it's not Christmas season yet. Love Christmas. I love the holiday season. But Thanksgiving, and I think this is something that maybe you guys can agree on, as you get older, Thanksgiving becomes the best holiday of the year, because you get an excessive amount of food. It's a guaranteed day off of work. It's pretty, for most people, I think it's a guaranteed 4-day weekend.
Football.
There's football to watch. There's going to be, and then the Blackhawks play on Friday at noon. So you can nurse your turkey hangover by watching a Blackhawks game. So Christmas is great and all, and we will have plenty of Christmas related things to get to when we get there. But Thanksgiving's coming up in 2 weeks and a day. And actually it'll be exactly 2 weeks the day this podcast is posted. And with food being the main events of Thanksgiving, we wanted to start diving into some Thanksgiving food takes. So I think Shay has one brewing up, but really quickly, this is just, I have something short and quick to offer, and I will see if any discussion comes of it. And if not, that's why we have Shay's backup plan, because my thing might be kind of lame. But I just want to offer, it's more of a grievance than a take. Electric stoves are fucking awful. I don't know if you guys have ever tried to cook anything on an electric stovetop. These things are the worst goddamn things we have ever come up with. I don't know who is responsible for them, but I would like to speak to their manager, because I don't know how people are supposed to cook good quality Thanksgiving foods on shitty electric stovetops.
Okay. So we're talking about the stovetops, right? Not like the little, like, not the natural gas grills that like still have.
No, I'm talking about like your oven that you plug into the wall. It's in everybody's kitchen and the top is electric, not with the gas burners. Gas burners are the way to go.
I have lived with electric stovetops since college. So college, grad school. And now like whenever I've been on my own, my family has like the natural gas.
Natural gas.
I cannot imagine cooking the amount of food that my family cooks for Thanksgiving on the thing I use every day for like HelloFresh meals. Not a sponsor. Yeah,
could be.
Like, could be. Come sponsor us. Look, like, yeah, it's no, like, there's no
agree or disagree. I don't know what you're
talking about. Yeah, I was saying
you're completely right. You're completely right.
I have no limited good experience. Way
to use them that will like allow you to make good.
I have been using it for a week and a half now, as I just moved into this place that has an electric stove, and I've already like, I think I have to save money to buy a new one because I can't deal with this fucking thing. It is terrible.
See, and like,
you can't clean.
I have limited experience with the electric, but they are a pain in the ass. But like I come from a big European family. We're Serbian. So like our Thanksgiving and religious holidays and Christmas and all this stuff, like we have, like my parents have a kitchen in the upstairs and the downstairs just for those holidays, like two gas stoves. So I'm with you.
Like I've been to a few Slavas, which I believe is in this.
Yeah. Mine's the 21st. So we got two in a row, basically Thanksgiving.
Oh boy. Yeah. Good luck to your heart doctor, your cardiologist. Jesus.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It's those are bomb though.
Yeah. All right. Well, that
I don't mind glass.
What'd you say about you?
But I don't mind glass top.
Okay. Here's the thing about glass top though, is that like it's going to scratch no matter what you do, and like there's not really good things to fix that yet.
There's a scratch cleaner that is pretty, like, I mean, mine looks fine still. So I don't know. Maybe I'm not like handling my stuff really like hardcore. I cook more in the oven than I do on the stovetop. And I try to make everything in a wok pot. So like, it's not a wok obviously, but it's like one that's kind of shaped like it so that it's easier to cook.
It's like a wok shaped skillet, right?
Yeah, exactly. So
yeah, I use that a lot too.
Yeah, I mean, it's really easy to cook one pot meals in it and that kind of stuff. So maybe
it doesn't stick. It's nice.
Yeah, and maybe I don't cook enough with multiple burners and multiple things. My mom does, and she has a glass top, but I don't like gas because I don't want to have to clean them. Like getting under the, like having to take it apart a little bit to get into the stuff. I hated that when we had one. But
I will take the cleanup over.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on the old electric ones that have the like little swirls. Those ones sucked real bad. I hated those. Those ones especially suck. Maybe because that was always my chore to clean. Like repressed. It's the same reason I'll never smoke is because one of my chores was emptying ashtrays.
Oh,
disgusting. But
I'm always disappointed that I'm not a smoker. Like I'd look so much cooler. I mean, I already look like I shop at the flea market every weekend for clothes. So, like, why not, right?
Just fully commit.
Bring back smoking in the United Center, please.
Is cancer? That's what.
Yeah, but no, I'm just kidding. Like, that's smoking is gross, but I mean, you know, it's an aesthetic.
It's about the look.
It's a vibe.
Don't you have longer hair, right?
Yeah, and I can't deal with it in my hair because
yeah, I was about to say it is. There's a bar that my work group likes to go to that it's if you go inside where it's less like sticky and cold and stuff, but it's going to be smoke filled the entire time. But if you're outside, you run the risk of having your clothes stick to the tables. It's like a lose-lose situation for me. But you go to the bathroom, I come out and I am like, now I have to shower because I smell disgusting. But
when I would get off work like a few years ago, five, six, 7 years ago, when I'd run the store, my hair is like, it is now, it's like shoulder length and real thick. And we would go to the bar before it got busy just to have a couple beers and shoot pool before the crowd came, and you could smoke in a lot of the bars where I live, and I hated that because then I'd go home and have to wash my hair at like 1 in the morning. So
there's still a few bars across Northwest Indiana where we are that you can still smoke inside, but they are very few and far between these days.
I mean, I live in Crown Point, so it's like a big ashtray with restaurants.
All right, I think we went far enough down. Somehow we ended up talking about smoking from stovetop, if you're electric, gas or electric, your stove is smoking, you might have an issue. But
I think it more talks about how I'm like, I have trauma from chores from when I was a child.
Well,
cleaning stoves and ashtrays was like.
Maybe Adam Gaudette has crystals that can help you work through that process.
Oh, would he share? I don't dislike him like I dislike Reese as a player. No,
well, that's you're just gonna have to join the Gaudette gang and get some of those for yourself. But
no, cubes all the way.
Okay.
Yep, two cubes.
But anyway, Gaudette probably has some. He probably has some other stuff that'll make you feel good too.
Did we talk about on here that we're into different factions of the staff?
Yeah, right now? I'm pretty sure it's.
I can't remember.
Well, that was our preseason where we Mill and I are the Gaudette gang, and I don't know if you guys have a cool name for yourself or the Kubelik.
We're Team Cubes.
What are
you talking about?
Yeah, but you guys don't have alliteration, so it's not as good.
Players better, like, so it's okay.
We're like the Degeneration X of the podcast.
We just do
whatever we want, even if we're wrong.
All right. Shay, get your food tag in before we get off on another tangent, because I think it was Thanksgiving related somewhat. So have at it.
Yes. So Thanksgiving related food is sweet potatoes.
Yes.
I think we can all agree.
Yeah.
This is a somewhat hot take. In all ways except French fries, sweet potatoes are better than potatoes. Mashed potatoes, sweet potatoes are better. Tater tots, sweet potatoes are better. Like casserole, like pie, in every way except French fries. Because if you serve me sweet potato French fries, I will push them away from myself so fast.
Weird.
I like sweet potato fries.
I don't have any disagreements because I think potatoes are wildly underrated.
How do you dislike it? You dislike sweet potato fries but are fine with tots? They feel like the same
mechanism to
get to there, so... They're just both fried.
I think it might be like a texture thing that I'm happier with the texture of sweet potato tots.
Have you ever had?
I've never had a good sweet potato French fry.
Have you ever had the waffle sweet potato fries? Like when they're in waffle shape?
No,
those are good.
And I think regular potatoes might be better for waffle fries. Not having had sweet potato waffle fries yet.
It's possible.
I'm having like a big vision here, like big perspective, but I just think like, why not both?
No,
I need carbs. Why not both?
I agree with everything except like, I don't like sweet potato pie that much. Like it's okay.
Oh, I'm not a sweet potato pie person, but like I don't think you could make a potato pie.
What about like shepherd's pie
that is in it? That is not a potato pie though. Sweet potato pie is just two thirds potatoes.
Like it's a lot of potatoes.
It depends on how you're making your shepherd's pie.
Every shepherd's pie I had when I was in England was like a massive amount of potatoes, and I was like, "What was I making this wrong all the time?"
No, they fucked up like the true English breakfast and stuff.
As a person whose heritage is mostly English, they're like, English cooking is not good.
I have a lot of English friends and I mess with them all the time. They're like, we're going to get you to eat meat when you come over because you have to have the English breakfast. And I'm just like, even if I ate meat, I'm afraid to try that.
Don't they like have beans for breakfast and things? You're like, that's not a breakfast food, sir.
A full English breakfast includes both beans and roasted tomatoes.
But I'm excited to try all the candy with all the like tons of sugar in it and like the beers and stuff. Like, I'm sure I'll just gain 100 pounds over there.
Oh, Mars bars are fantastic.
I don't like sweet potato casserole that much either. Like,
I'm not sure I've ever had a sweet potato casserole.
But I guess how do you not like sweet potato, sweet potato casserole? If you're talking about the thing I'm picturing, where it's just sweet potatoes topped with marshmallows, how do you not like that?
Isn't that just all right? Because
it might be a texture yams? Thing. Like, I don't like
candied yams. Is that what you call a sweet potato casserole, Shepherd?
I believe sweet potatoes and yams
are different things, though. They're like completely different. They are. One is orange inside and one is not. Okay.
They're both orange inside.
I thought they were the same thing.
I thought sweet potato casserole is like candied yams.
Sweet potatoes are closer to a regular potato than it is to a sweet potato. Like, they're tinted. Like, it's not like the same like gold or white that a regular potato is, but they're not as brightly orange as, they're not the same thing. They're definitely different.
That's another thing in the office.
They're both orange.
What one's Michael asked solar. Ryan to get him is the yams.
I'm right? Gonna look it up now. Thank you.
I guess go to the grocery store.
I guess from Google, like, a yam is a sweet potato, but a sweet potato is not necessarily a yam. No.
It says in the United States, the term yam and sweet potato are used interchangeably, but they are completely different vegetables. Yams are starchy and have a rough brown exterior, and sweet potatoes are softer with reddish tint skin. Creamier interior and darker interior.
Okay, they're showing pictures of yams, and I've never seen those in my life. So
welcome to the
I don't know what the hell people were calling yams, but those are definitely sweet potatoes. Or definitely, yeah.
I think people are just calling sweet, like, somebody's mislabeling sweet potatoes as yams.
No, I think that's what's happening here, and I guess at Thanksgiving this year, I'm going to be yelling at every member of my family who's been steering me wrong for the last 3+ decades. So
I'm talking about yams and not sweet potatoes then, because sweet potatoes look like regular potatoes.
No, yams look like regular, like, they look closer to regular potatoes than yams do. That sweet potatoes. Sweet potatoes are orange, really orange.
Well,
the other ones are lightly orange.
Oh, okay. Never mind. This people that I, the first post I found had it backwards. No. Yeah. So yams look like potatoes.
We're being educated right now.
This is like the masked vegetable right now.
Because we just discussed, like, they are used interchangeably in our country.
Yeah, yeah.
No matter how backwards that is.
Yeah.
Is that based off where you are in the U.S.? Like, is it like, maybe a southern thing, because we always do this because Betsy's in the south. Like, is it more of a southern thing where there's actually a difference between the two, and in the Midwest they're just interchanged?
I don't know. I just maybe? Know I've definitely know. Cooked with yams that are not sweet potatoes. they look similar-ish but not the same. But I've also never had yams at Thanksgiving, so I don't know.
The only difference in the South is that they don't use Pepsi branded yams, just Coke.
Jesus. You don't have yams at Thanksgiving? Well, no. You have sweet potatoes. Sorry.
Yes. We do. Sweet potatoes.
Okay. Yeah, sweet potatoes. Going
back to the sweet potato pie discussion, like, yeah, I bake pie for both Christmas and Thanksgiving. And I got to say, like, pumpkin 100% of the way.
Oh, yeah. Pumpkin pecan are the two fall flavors that everybody should eat at Thanksgiving and Christmas. They're the superior pies, but
those are the pies I bake.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. Pecan is my favorite and pumpkin is a close second. So
so this is your time of the year. Yeah.
I love fall. I think we've discussed this too, because I was like, look, it starts with Halloween in October when it's cool. The weather is fun. I love sweaters and sweatshirts. I love boots. I'm ready for fall.
Yeah, I've been full denim jacket thriving lately.
No,
especially this fall where it's red season.
Red season?
It's red season. It's red season Taylor's version.
Oh, okay.
Oh. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, I messed that up. I'm putting out music the same way as Taylor Swift. And I literally didn't realize that. And now I'm have to compete with Taylor Swift. No one's going to listen to my music. That's great.
I don't think there's
thanks, Taylor Swift
between those fan bases, Mel. I'm just
You'd be surprised. A lot of people like Taylor Swift.
I was like, hey, you were saying I was thriving, but it actually hasn't really, like, today's high was like 72. So it wasn't like, unless I go out at night a lot, it's been dipping into the 50s, but that's like,
oh, so sad for you.
We're 50 here during the day.
I think it's going to snow this weekend. I think that's the report.
Oh, I wish. I'm going to like two parties on Friday and the high is 65. And that's the lowest it's been all year, and I'm excited about that because they're both at nighttime. So
be sure to pack your winter jacket so you don't.
It should get into the should get into the 50s and maybe upper 40s. So I'm like, woo!
Oh boy,
I know. So this is how pathetic I am living in the South. It's not humid, at least. So
well, we've made our way to the weather conversation portion of the podcast. So I think that means we're probably need to bring this one in for a landing. So
yes.
That is going to do it for this episode of Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. Once again, you can find me on Twitter at @SCH_DaveM. Shepherd is at Shepherd Price. Mill is at Mill182. Betsy's not on Twitter, but you can find her at secondcityhockey.com under the name LBR, where you can find all of our stuff. And we're doing plenty of previews and recaps. And with only one game coming up in the next like 6-7 days, we're going to have a lot of other stuff popping up. We got a prospect update coming up because Lucas Reichel's tearing up the AHL right now. And there's a bunch of college prospects that are doing very well. So keep an eye out for that. We'll have some other articles popping up. Stay tuned to These Airwaves. We'll do another podcast next week and the week after that, and probably just keep going throughout the season because that's kind of our thing. The main account is at 2ND City Hockey, so you can follow that on Twitter. Also, if you wanted to head to iTunes or wherever it is you get your podcast and leave us some like 5-star reviews, that would be wonderful as well. So thanks to you for listening. Thanks to Mill, Betsy, and Shay for hanging out this evening. We'll talk to you next week. And go Hawks? Yeah, I guess go Hawks.
Got that game.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.